as far too many of you die. You know we've got to find.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Hey, good morning, Connor. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
Yeah, so am I, man. You know, it's Friday, man. We got to be doing all right.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
So excited for this weekend. I wish it wasn't dead cold today, but, you know.
You're excited because of the warm weather or the weekend?
No, I'm excited because I can not, you know, relax, you know.
I was going to get to you, Sandy. It's Friday, and that means Friday's.
Hey, boss, me, I'm over here.
Sandy, oh, I didn't see Sandy. He's been here for the past 20 minutes. I haven't seen him.
You haven't seen him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sandy, what about you? How you doing?
Oh, I'm fine.
You're fine. Okay. The world's fine. Sandy's fine.
Yeah.
And all those other things.
Alert the media.
You know, Sandy, there's a lot of stuff going on. Sometimes we come in, you got to scrap to try to find something. But there's just a lot of stuff going on. I was listening to Rance Priebus talking about the 2024 convention that's coming to Milwaukee, Republican convention.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, the sheer numbers of people who are going to be here, it's kind of blows my mind.
Talk about an invasion.
Yeah, man, I couldn't.
I mean, we talk about the invasion from the border, to the southern border, but this is going to be an invasion in Milwaukee of a bunch of people coming for the Republican convention.
20,000 hotel rooms are what, at a minimum.
Yeah.
And hundreds of thousands of people.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yes, that are going to be coming. I was listening to Rance Priebus talk, and I couldn't understand the magnitude of what it is.
Well, you know, there's a huge caravan of media and things that follow these conventions. I mean, I suspect the delegates are just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the number of people who end up coming to the city for the convention.
Well, that's what they were talking about. The delegates are one thing, but it's all the other ancillary groups and people who come, and they basically take over a city.
Yeah, I mean, I was part of a process in a convention long ago, 72 in Miami, and you know, Miami's a huge city,
right?
Lots of space, but it was pretty much overrun. And I remember we stayed in condominiums that were rented, so that there was, because it was, the city ran out of space.
Right. Well, Rance Priebus talked about this summer. There's kind of like, I don't know what they call it, a trial run or whatever it is. They're going to have a bunch of people here, always the year before a summer convention. So this summer,
sort of a dry run, huh?
Well, you know, it's a convention, so to speak, a mini convention where a year out, they come to the city this summer, and they're going to do a lot of things this summer.
You know, the convention center expansion is timed to be completed in time. There's several hotels under construction right now that are timed to be completed. There were a bunch of hotels built in expectation of
the Democratic convention,
and unfortunately, they got built, and then the convention. But they're all going to be available. So you know, it is a shot in the arm in terms of Milwaukee creating its capacity to now host very large meetings and conventions. So
well, you know,
that's a good thing.
If things hadn't happened with COVID, they would have had the Democratic and the Republican convention. I know that happened in Charlotte a few years back. They got them both. But to think that Milwaukee is on that trajectory, says something positive about it, would you say?
Well, and the like I said, the capacity to have big meetings and conventions like that opens up the process for having lots of conventions here. Conventions do like going to cities that are manageable in scale, you know, so that it's not, it's much easier and cheaper to have a convention in Milwaukee than it is to have it in Los Angeles
or New York City. So let me ask you, Sandy, Miami's got a lot of entertainment and other things going for it. It's one thing to come to a convention. Does Milwaukee have enough entertainment and those kind of things to... Restaurants.
Well, we are known to have a substantial number of good restaurants, so that I think Milwaukee's known for that. I think restaurants will be the main strain in terms of capacity, because you know, when you go to a convention, you're spending a great deal of time in and on the convention, and the ancillary folks are too. But so restaurants will get tested. It'll be good for them. It'll be a shot in the arm, in terms of. And it'll be a shot in the arm to downtown and near downtown areas.
So what are some of the destination things that you've been around? Does Milwaukee fit with destination places and things? I mean, that maybe you will.
Summertime Milwaukee, sure. I mean, they've got the Summerfest grounds. I suspect that they'll figure out a way to have things going on at Summerfest. Milwaukee's actually got a lot of things in the summer that make it a very convenient kind of a place to have a convention.
So it will be during the times Summerfest, September.
Summerfest grounds are available.
Oh yeah,
saying that, the amphitheater can be used for entertainment purposes.
Oh, no question. That's beautiful. No question. But there's got to be, entertainment is got to be big when we're talking that. Here's a guy who knows all about entertainment, and he knows everything about everything else. Dave from Mequon.
Oh.
But Sandy, I'm just, the lakefront certainly is beautiful. But what are you going to bring people here to just be on the lake?
Well, what are they going to do in any city? I mean,
What's the
comparison? No, I think Milwaukee's got quite a bit going for it. It's got lakefront parks. It's got good restaurants and many restaurants. It's got it's very convenient to get around in. You can take an Uber ride and get to any place in the city in 15 minutes or 20 minutes. If you go to Los Angeles. The convention in Los Angeles will have lots of people living in places or staying places.
Yeah, but that's spread out.
45 minutes away.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just saying the convenience of Milwaukee makes accessible to everyone who comes to Milwaukee everything, not just in downtown, but in metropolitan Milwaukee.
So I got an idea why they say yes to Milwaukee.
What's that?
The trolley. Hey, Dave. Yeah. What's going on?
Hey, good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. to Sandy's point, obviously, not only is it easy to get around the city, but it's easy to get to the suburbs. And there's certainly a lot of communities that they would be probably interested in seeing. And we do have the brewery tours, and we do have the casino, and we do have the brewers that they could go to potentially. And there's a lot of local fairs going on too.
I forgot about the casino.
We live in Milwaukee, and so we all take for granted everything around it. I was flying back from England once, sitting next to a guy from England who was coming to the United States for a second visit. He said he'd been here on a tour the first time. He'd had a wonderful time. The tour had gone to some really neat places. They'd gone to San Francisco in the West. They'd gone to Yellowstone. Gone to these national parks. They came to Chicago. They went to a wonderful little small town that he thought was small town America that was in Wisconsin. I said, small, what town? Cedarburg. Cedarburg, Wisconsin, was the object of a national tour of tourists coming from around the world.
Really?
So, yeah. I mean, when you think about it, Cedarburg is a very unique, nifty little small town. You can get Amy's apples up there.
It is.
Yeah. So when you talk about... So
they also have the best taffy apples in the country.
That's what I'm saying. Amy's apples, the taffy.
So do we take for granted what Milwaukee has become? I mean, it's certainly evolved. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I mean, everybody takes for granted where they live. You know, if you grew up in New York, you don't take advantage of what all right. the visitors come to New York to do. So, you know, I think we underestimate, I think, all the zoo. There's lots of things that people will do when they come to Milwaukee that we just all kind of overlook.
The other thing, Earl, if you just saw the other day, you know, Northwestern Mutual Life is closing their Franklin campus, and they're going to bring all those additional employees downtown. And, you know, they've been hiring, clearly stated in the article, they've been hiring additional people. And when they have their convention, I mean, the amount of people that come in from all over the place when Northwestern Mutual has convention is very dramatic. So there's a lot of positive. And of course, Milwaukee Tool now is moving downtown, and the Kohl's department store is actually opened up in the former Boston store location. So there's definitely it's going in the right direction as far as where the city is. And
hey Dave, hang on a second, man. We got to go to a quick break. We come back. I want to talk a little bit more about it. Sandy Williams, it's Friday with Sandy Williams, and, you know, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams and Dave. You know, I was asking Sandy, Dave, during the break because, you know, there are people probably in the state who don't know that downtown Milwaukee is in time going to be a destination place. Is it safe to say that, Sandy?
In a way. I mean, I have
people, yes.
I have people who come in from out of town who look around Milwaukee and love it. You know, they're surprised by it. The news media, when they come here to cover the Bucks, they covered it, and you could tell that they were genuinely surprised at what all it had to offer. Chicagoans have been moving up here for quite a while to live along in the condos along the river and all these places, you know, because the real estate costs here are a fraction of what they are in a major city like Chicago, and what they get for that is far better, you know.
Yeah, you don't say.
They can live on the Milwaukee River, have a boat in the river. It's, you know. It's,
you say what, Connor?
I said you don't say. Like, that's like the main reason why I moved from Chicago. I mean, because it's just extraordinarily expensive. Especially if you're a young person starting out trying to save money, it's pretty much impossible unless you're going to some type of college or something.
You know, people have built on rivers across this country, and you hear all the great talk about a river. We've got that lakefront. And Sandy, you know, you're down there, it's beautiful.
Well, the lakefront is an amenity, but, you know, based on the public use doctrine, there'll never be people living along the lake other than on the bluff above it, looking down at it. But, you know, I'll have to hand it to Mayor Norquist and his vision they had for the Riverwalk, because the Riverwalk is an extraordinary change to the urban space. And it has created in the urban space, it has beautified what was an ugly wound, which when the river was simply an industrial sewer for tannery and everything along it. all of those things have been converted now to, you know, wonderful living spaces. The River Walk is extraordinary. People were used to go to San Antonio to walk on this River Walk, which was not a special place.
No.
Nothing like what Milwaukee has. So, you know, I think we just underestimate when we, when you look at other cities, you go to a St. Louis or someplace like that, none of them have a downtown that has all of the sort of convenience, comfort, and ambience Milwaukee does.
And Dave, I'll let you in after this. Is it because Dave and Sandy that Milwaukee was so late in its development of the downtown? Comparable cities, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, all those places have long since redeveloped their downtowns. It's only been recent.
Well, I would say don't put Cleveland into the long since. Cleveland has redeveloped, and so has Pittsburgh, but they've been more or less on a parallel path. We haven't actually, both of them have done quite a good job, Pittsburgh in particular. But, you know, you look at the data. I was looking at data on the size, the population of the old Rust Belt cities, and what they were and what they are now. And actually, Milwaukee has shrunk less than most of those other cities, which have shrunk in at a precipitously high rate. Many of the northern cities are undergoing a rebirth. I just think Milwaukee has more going for it from the standpoint of its geography.
Dave?
I agree with what Sandy is saying. The flip side is that, you know, the other thing that Norquist did was he was also a big advocate of getting rid of the Park East West Freeway. And because of that, subsequently, we were able to get the Pfizer Forum. Originally, Harley-Davidson was going to build their museum. That was one of the reasons why they took it down, but they didn't. But that being said, it really has connected that part of the city now to going towards the north side. And there's talk about, you know, removing the piece of freeway between the Third Ward and downtown, which probably would even be exploding even more. You open up all that real estate down there. Yes, Sandy's correct. There's a lot more going for it. I mean, you compare our lakefront, which is very accessible in comparison to most places. You know, you don't have to pay for parking. The art museum is obviously on the map as far as, you know, people visiting, coming up here to see the art museum because of Calatrava. And so there's a lot of smaller things. You know, smaller museums that kind of get overlooked, but they're little gems. And we have been written up consistently now in travel magazines and other publications throughout the country saying, hey, you know what? This is a good alternative if you don't want to go to your, you know, regular mainstay place and do something a little bit off the beaten path.
And affordable is what Sandy.
Well,
in comparison.
Yeah. I mean, we are a very affordable destination. But take our lakefront. There was a lot of vision in the folks who set it aside, and particularly as it was built out. You know, our lakefront is mostly, as you go north from the downtown, it's all artificial land that was built out, forever dedicated to the public, but accessible. Cleveland is on a lake too, you know, but no one talks about the Cleveland lakefront,
right?
Because they didn't have the same kind of foresight. And the Cleveland lakefront has, you know, steel mills and things on it. So, you know, Milwaukee had a history of people politically from the standpoint of the socialists back when who were park builders. And so, you know, we just have – there's a lot going for the way the city is laid out geographically as well as the way it was
built. Hey, Sandy.
Yeah.
You used that word.
Socialist.
Yes.
Yeah.
No,
we're gonna ban that word here.
Well, you told me I had not read. Apparently, the Congress has decided to take up the issue of whether socialists are what did you tell me?
Well, we're gonna get into it after the break. 844-967-2789. Dave, thank you as always, man.
Sure.
All right, we'll talk later. So, Sandy, go to the Hill. House passes resolution denouncing socialism. I mean, why are we wasting time, right?
Well, I hope they defined the socialism before they decided to denounce it. Because you want to know what you're denouncing.
The House Thursday approved a resolution denouncing socialism. Jess, they're nuts, man.
Well, I think they are.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Wiggs. And Sandy, before we went to break, you used that word, man.
Socialism. I had no idea that I was using a term that had been condemned by this Congress, U.S. Congress. Just recently, they decided to take up time to condemn socialism. They didn't really define socialism in the resolution that they adopted, apparently. You teed me up on this. I went and looked it up, and they said, look, it argues that many of the greatest crimes in history were committed by socialist ideologues. And then they mentioned Vladimir Lenin, who was one of the early communist versions of socialism, Joseph Stalin, Mao Zedong, Fidel Castro, Pol Pot. All of these people embraced something that was called communism as well as socialism. Socialism has long been sort of a hard-to-define concept, but they should have included on that list, I think, Mayor Zeidler, who was the most recent socialist.
Mayor Zeidler.
Well, he was a socialist mayor.
I know.
Now, socialism in the terms that was used in Wisconsin's history were people who politically believed in installing sewers, that they were a public necessity that needed to be socialized. They believed in parks. That was a socialist initiative. Social Security was a so-called socialist initiative. Socialist simply means that you are going to socialize, meaning you're going to join under the government certain functions. We have socialized a number of things. We've socialized the military. We've socialized our highways. We've socialized a great deal of things in America. But apparently, and many countries in the world have developed some aspect of their economy which has been socialized. Government, you know, there is healthcare provided in England, which is provided by the government. They've socialized their healthcare. Other places have simply made healthcare available to all by socializing the insurance of it. So Medicare is the socialized insurance for medical care for the elderly. We could have Medicare for all, which would simply socialize the insurance process for all people in this country, who would then all get Medicare in the same way that the elderly get Medicare today. So this is foolishness, and clearly this was done so that they could hold people's feet. I noticed a bunch of Democrats had to vote for this because they did not.
Over half of them.
They didn't want to be put in the next election. They didn't want to be pointed at and said, this guy, this person favors socialism because they voted against a resolution condemning socialism. And what we should be doing is we should be educating the public, not dumbing the public down. But this is all just a continuation of magical dumbed-down thinking so that the term socialism can be used to vilify people when socialism means a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
So, you know, Sandy, it to me, as I was reading it, I almost couldn't believe that. I mean, what's to be gained? To spend that time having the discussion. I don't know, telling how long they had this discussion.
This is the same kind of concept of deflecting the politicians' the attention of our elected delegates to government, deflecting their attention from things that are actually important to something that is not important. This is truly trivial, much less important than the government deciding where people can go to the bathroom.
You know, I like the way you were shaking your finger, because that's really, you know, what that is. That's really the purpose of it, because why else? I mean, I'm wondering, 844-967-2789, I'm wondering if there's anyone out there who thinks that just socialism means that it's anti-capitalism. That's not what socialism stands for or means, as you just explained,
well,
Sandy.
It depends on which version of socialism. But socialism as a term simply relates to the situation in which government socializes, and that means brings under the sort of the national or the state government ambit something, okay? Highways, bridges, military, police, schools. All of those things are socialized so that the government can provide them to all. And so that is not socialism in the terms that what they're talking about here is something that they would, I'm sure, have a capital S to, socialism. And then the fools that wrote this wanted to suggest that socialism was the kind of stuff that created Pol Pot.
Well,
and I'm not even sure that Pol Pot was a communist or a socialist. I think he was a horrendous dictator, an authoritarian figure. I'm not sure what he was.
Well, here's what I have for you.
What's that?
I've got the right guy who can explain what that means.
Good time?
No, it's CJ.
All right.
Good morning to you, CJ. You're going to explain why it's important that this, you know, be done, right? You're going to explain why.
Well, I think this is brilliant. Speaker McCarthy is doing exactly what he said he was going to do. He's kicking off people that don't deserve to be on committees.
Okay, hey, what about the socialism? Hey, what about the socialism issue?
It's
that
brilliant.
We're
they're getting
about.
These people on record, and they're going to do that on all kinds of things.
Well, but CJ, will you? Can we just talk about socialism as a concept? Because you will agree, won't you, that the army is the result of socializing military, that bridges are the result of socializing highways, that Social Security is the result of socializing retirement benefits, that Medicare is the result of socializing health insurance for the elderly, that parks in Milwaukee were the result of socializing common spaces for the use of the public, that sewers were the result of socializing the process of collecting sewage rather than septic fields, and that all of these things are a form of socialism, and it's a question of where you draw the line, isn't it? I mean, don't you agree that socialism exists and that it needs to exist in to the extent that it's defined in those ways?
In certain aspects of our life, yes.
Yeah, there we go. Andy, don't you think that they ought to define, if they're going to denounce socialism, don't you think they ought to define what kind of socialism it is? Because, for instance, lumping Pol Pot and listing that these people who they would describe as being the result of socialism, when quite frankly, I'm not sure what relationship Pol Pot has whatsoever to socialism, but everyone they listed was at least a communist version of socialism.
I'd love for you, Sandy, to actually get one of those Democratic congressmen or congresswomen that you're upset with, that they voted affirmative on the Republicans' action on socialism, and let them define why they voted the way they did. I can tell you're upset with that. You want to try to categorize what socialism is. And
no,
the mere fact that we're,
my only concern is that we shouldn't dumb down. I just am concerned about dumbing down the debate about things into words, so that we have a word like woke.
That words is, that, that is, have meaning?
Words need to mean something. You're right. Words have meaning only if they have meaning, okay? So the word woke, word woke has an expansive meaning that is undefined at this point. And socialism, if you're going to condemn something, you ought to at least define what you're condemning, because they aren't, I presume, condemning the version of socialism that brings us Social Security, Medicare, parks and sewers,
and then to call it the term.
We're going to find out what they believe, because they believe the border is progressive, is a liberal because liberal didn't work in campaigns anymore.
CJ, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the fact that the word socialism seems to resonate with people. I don't give a rip about whether or not somebody denounces socialism. Why is that important?
Because what they want to believe is socialism is what I don't believe is a good thing.
Well, let's just talk about it. CJ, for instance,
what was the vote on then, Sandy?
Yeah, it was overwhelming. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the folly of politics.
Read it.
I'll tell you exactly. 328 yay.
Yeah.
86 no.
Yeah, it was overwhelmingly in favor.
The question was. What
the
was
resolution.
The
the House it was on Thursday approved the resolution. Denouncing socialism in a bipartisan vote.
The resolution was 3 pages long, and it didn't define socialism. I just was reading through the resolution. But I'm simply pointing out that this is the kind of waste of time that I hate to see our Congress involved in.
You guys
because
would say that.
I would much rather have them deal with issue by issue and decide which things are a form of socialism that they decide is indigestible, because there are some forms of socialism that I don't view myself as a socialist at all. Do I believe that there ought to be universal access to health care? Yes. Do I believe that Medicare for all is a good idea? Yes. Do I think I'm a socialist?
Well, that's not
no.
the question, though, is it?
No, no, but it, but
that's
it,
not the question.
Well, it is the question in a way, because if socialism is bad, then the question is, what forms of socialism are bad? Because I'm saying yes to, I think we ought to socialize health insurance for everyone.
Hey, CJ.
Yeah, but
there are forms of capitalism that are not good. So to just, across the board say something is not good, as Sandy just stated, is a waste of time. Most of the people in this audience don't care whether or not the Congress denounced socialism. You're probably
because
the only guy.
Progressive liberal socialist.
Well, now
that's
wait a minute. See, now wait.
Care.
See, here's my problem, CJ. You and I could we could have much better conversations if we didn't name call. If you would call me a socialist,
being called a liberal or a progressive is a bad thing, or a socialist?
Liberal is one thing, and I don't know what it means either, and I don't know if I'm a liberal. I suspect
anymore.
I am, but I don't know.
You are.
You decide.
So what does that matter? Is that a negative thing if you say you're a liberal?
Well, I guess it is now.
Is it a bad word?
They don't use it in campaigns anymore. You got to use progressive. I'm a progressive.
You call yourself a conservative. What difference does it make?
It's really about what their beliefs are.
Well,
and
that's exactly right. So
getting the liberal Democrats on record for what they believe. A lot of them are afraid of being, and they all, how many voted against it? How many Democrats voted?
86 voted nay.
You know why they did it?
Yeah, they had the courage. They had the courage to say this doesn't make any sense.
I mean, what would happen, do you think, if the Congress decided to vote that they were denouncing liberals? How would you feel about that? Do you think, CJ, that it would be a good thing if Congress had the right vote, the head count there, if they denounced liberals in Congress as being I don't know what it means. They denounce socialists, but I don't know what sanction there is for that. I don't know what they denounced it, but I don't know what impact that has. But let's say
zero.
Let's say that they could gather the votes. If they denounced liberals, would you be in favor of that?
Again, you can speculate.
Well, we have to talk about that the next time.
Yeah, well, I think it's an important
967-2078. Listen, we got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Get up on that thing.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. That's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We are talking about the fact that, believe it or not, with all the issues and all the things that are going on in this country, and we're going to talk about a lot of them after this segment, that our Congress would waste time, you know, trying to figure out who supports the term socialist and who doesn't, and what you are if you support the term socialist.
And here's the reason why I think it's worthwhile for us to talk about this for a moment, and that is the fact that what's happened in politics recently is the weaponization of words. And this resolution is clearly an effort to sort of, in a legitimized fashion, weaponize the term socialism. So that if someone is described as a socialist, then you have, through the weaponization of that word, described them as essentially a bad person, a person who's cultivating bad beliefs. And, you know, we've weaponized the term liberal to the point that, and we've also weaponized right wing. We've weaponized conservative. We've decided to categorize people. CJ just told me I was a liberal. I don't know what I am exactly, because I don't figure that I don't feel like categorizing myself. I have different thoughts about different things. I'm a libertarian about a bunch of things. I'm a fiscal realist about a bunch of things. I don't know what that paints me as. But we've decided to weaponize terms, and then through the weaponization of terms, we can essentially name call, and we can categorize people as good or bad. And it's a very dangerous thing. It's what's destroying political dialogue in America. And so that's why I'm glad you brought the subject up. And I'm glad CJ called in, because I think CJ should think about this question. CJ hesitated. Maybe he's still on the line.
He is.
About if they had the votes, whether Congress ought not to vote that liberals are in the same category as socialists. And and of course, that would be, I mean, that's such a more clearly fraught point, right? But socialism isn't that different, because there's so many different kinds of socialism. You know, Bernie Sanders called himself a socialist, but, you know, he was a far different socialist than Lenin.
So CJ called you a liberal. And so we hear that a liberal is this horrifying word based on what people on the right say. Here's the definition. One who is open-minded or not strict in the observance of orthodox, traditional, or established forms or ways. Capitalized, a member or supporter of a liberal political party. Let's go willing to respect or accept behavior or opinions different from one's own. Open to new ideas. Relating to or denoting the political and social philosophy that promotes individual rights, civil liberties, democracy, and free enterprise.
That's what the dictionary says.
Right.
But then we've got the urban dictionary that is the colloquial use of the term liberal and the political term use of the term liberal. And particularly when liberal is used by someone who isn't a liberal to accuse someone of being a liberal, then it means something quite different.
I know, but that,
so I mean, but I mean, the term is slowly being weaponized, and it's a very successful Madison Avenue approach to things to create like the word woke.
So Sandy,
the word woke is being weaponized.
So what is the point of having words in the dictionary and the definition of them? And then we allow people to unilaterally change the definition of those things based on what? Only what they feel and what they think? Then what's the purpose of having the dictionaries?
I mean, languages evolve. And so they evolve from what the dictionary said in 1920 to what it says in 2050 based on how the word is used and understood and how words are understood evolve. And so there is this effort ongoing now to take a word like liberal and evolve it into a much more weaponized kind of a term.
By
it doesn't matter. I mean, the question is, how is it understood? And that's kind of what this resolution by Congress is all about, too, is to try and fix a public's understanding of a word
so that it
can then be used for its purposes.
So those people who want to change what that means, that's a group of people. There's another whole group of people who they're directing it at who still want to look at the definition based on what's in those dictionaries. So the people who are changing it, Sandy, that's not agreed to by everybody. So how do you respond, and how can there ever be consensus when there's a group of people changing the definition of what the words are?
Well, that's why, you know, when in English, when we take it in high school, we talk about communication. And language is used for communication. And in order to be communication, a word is intended by the user of the word, and the perception of that word is received by the person who receives the word. And they are actually communicating with one another if the sender has the same intent as the user perceives, okay? But if that breaks down, then you don't really have communication. You've got something less than complete communication.
Which is where we are now.
And so then when you weaponize words, you get a whole group of people who can use a word, and then the perception of that word is unified. The question is, how is it unified? So, like, for instance, We long ago were able to weaponize the word communist, and we understood that communist meant someone who believed something bad. Not many people could probably sit down and explain exactly what a communist believes, but they knew it was bad, okay? And so now the question is the word socialist. Who is a socialist, and what do they believe, and what is the signal that's received by the person who receives the word socialist? And there's an effort ongoing now, including this resolution in Congress, I guess, to tee up a particular kind of received information. The question is, how educated is that receipt of information? Is socialist simply being painted as a word that can now be received in the same manner that communist was?
So we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. Friday's with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.